chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make the heaven in the middle of it. Rest make the heaven in the middle. We are. Rest make the
secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Going to start off with a couple of short 4 or 5 minute clips here from Greg Rees. The first one will be Epstein and the Silicon Valley Bank and his connections to that bank that recently was closed in California. So here we go with Greg Rees talking about Epstein and the Silicon Valley Bank.
Weeks before the Silicon Valley Bank collapse, several executives sold off large shares of stock, while mainstream media tells its audience to invest in them. On March 9th, the day before the collapse, Israel's two largest banks pulled up to $1 billion out of SVB, while Peter Thiel's Founders Fund withdrew millions and advised their clients to do the same. The next day, there was a run on the bank, and Silicon Valley Bank collapsed. Is this evidence of a controlled demolition or a hasty one? The day before the collapse, a U.S. judge ordered J.P. Morgan Chase to turn over documents in a lawsuit accusing them of aiding in Jeffrey Epstein's sex trafficking operation. The team behind this lawsuit was the same team who successfully exposed the involvement of Deutsche Bank, and they subpoenaed several other banks they believe were involved in sex trafficking, including Silicon Valley Bank and Bank Leumi, the Israeli bank that drained $1 billion out of SVB the day before it collapsed. Whatever the reason, the U.S. government's response threatens to collapse the world economy. The FDIC insures up to $250,000 for each depositor, but now they are going to cover all depositor losses, and they don't have enough to cover the $175 billion of SVB losses, let alone the trillions of dollars to be lost on the near horizon as banks across the world begin to break. The systemic risk among GSIBs, global systemically important banks, is that they are so deeply connected that when one falls, they will all follow. Much of the world's economy is already collapsing due to the actions of the U.S. government and the Federal Reserve banking system. And much of the world has been preparing for the end of the U.S. dollar as a world reserve currency. After all the smaller banks die, the people will be left with the central bank, and their solution is the CBDC. CBDC stands for Central Bank Digital Currency. With CBDC, there are no more options. Everyone's account is run directly through the central bank system.
As the financial system gets more controlling and more invasive, it's a little bit like bringing up a corral around us. And CBDCs, central bank digital currencies, and vaccine passports or digital IDs are sort of the last shutting of the gate. It's hard for many people to imagine the risks here because we're so used to living with financial transaction freedom, and we don't understand that when this gate closes on us, we literally will be sitting in a system where the central banks believe that our assets belong to them, and they can dictate where we can spend money and what we can spend money on. If you don't behave, you can have your money turned off.
There are 12 Federal Reserve banks, which are located in cities being considered for the 15-minute city model of the World Economic Forum. This is where it's all headed, and there isn't much pushback in the federal government. Utah Senator Mike Lee introduced the No CBDC Act last September, which will likely go nowhere. But we the people have much more sway over our local governments. An Oklahoma House committee unanimously passed a bill to protect Oklahomans from being forced to adopt a CBDC. It's time for we the people to unite with our neighbors and local communities and prepare to liberate ourselves from the central bank system. Recall our corrupt county officials and start looking into local barter and trade systems, because central bank digital currency is coming at us quickly and it equals financial enslavement. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
Boy, this is getting scary. This digital currency is going to be the end of our freedoms. We still can spend with some of our cash on what we want to, but that's coming. Now, another Greg Reese report is just coming up right now, and he's going to elaborate a little bit on this digital currency program that's going to be instituted by the Fed in July of this year. It's coming fast. So pay attention. So here we go again with Greg Reese elaborating somewhat on the digital currency that the Fed is instituting.
Founded by David Rockefeller, the Trilateral Commission has been an arm of the globalist deep state since 1973. Last week at their annual meeting, a speaker who cannot be identified according to commission rules said that we are now in a period of structural inflation that will last for decades. They said that the free market is over and industry now sets policy. And they said that this year, 2023, is year one of this new global order. Days later, the Federal Reserve Bank announces a July launch for their new FedNow service, which was first announced in October of 2021. The too-big-to-fail banks and all the large processors are already on board, and so is the U.S. Treasury. The first week of April, the Federal Reserve begins the FedNow pilot program for early adopters to become certified participants to help the Fed confirm readiness for their July launch. FedNow is an instant payment processing system that seeks to be the base of all digital transactions, acting as an umbrella company to manage all financial payments. This has been shown to be the gateway to a central bank digital currency, CBDC. FedNow is much like the Reserve Bank of India's instant payment system, the Unified Payments Interface, or UPI. UPI has had huge success in converting rural communities into a complete cashless society. According to the International Monetary Fund, UPI democratized the payment system and paved the way for central bank digital currencies. Central bank instant payment processing is also how the Central Bank of Nigeria introduced its CBDC, eNaira, which has been, so far, violently rejected. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
We're getting into dangerous control. 1984. Boy, it's been here for a while. It's getting worse. But anyway, we need to know that information. And like he said, in April, they're going to do a pilot program. So beware and try to protect yourself in as many ways as possible. Coming up next is Alex Jim Hoft with Gateway Pundit, and they're talking about January 6th. And also, just recently, this last week, Tucker Carlson was given the access to videos, and there was 41,000 videos, and he put some up and got blowback from the top level of Fox Network, it appears. So he toned it down a little bit in subsequent broadcasts, but there's enough out there that he got the ball rolling. We want to thank Tucker Carlson for everything he's done on the January 6th issue and tragedy, I should say. But here we go with Alex and Jim Hoft.
They're hanging their hat on this fraud. That's why it's so important to take down. Our listeners write me, they email me, they say, why are you covering January 6th? We know it was staged. Okay, well, the audience here, and Gateway Pundit readers know it, but the general public still doesn't fully get it. Sure, in polls, what, like 6% of Americans think it's important. It's something like 80-something percent, you know, are against the war or think inflation is bad. The American people get it, but they don't understand we're all being branded as terrorists based on this fraud. We've got to bring this lie down.
You know, a great example of that too, Alex, and I agree with you 100%, is the fact that Americans, if you ask most Americans about that day, they would say maybe 5 police officers were killed that day, because we have the president of the United States and Democrats spreading that lie continuously to this day. Of course, every bit of that is a lie. Not one police officer died that day. Officer Sicknick, of course, died the following day from a stroke. And then they're trying to say that these other policemen who committed suicide months later somehow did that because of January 6th. We have no proof of that at all, and neither do they. There were 4 individuals who did die that day. They were all Trump supporters. And, you know, we put up a video this past weekend, too, of this woman, Victoria White, who was there. She's from Minnesota, you know, lower middle class, real sweet lady. She went there. She got pushed in this tunnel, and they beat the living hell out of her. You know, there's one cop, and we identified him in our report. He beat her with his bare fist for like 40 times with a stick and a fist right in her face. We showed this horrific video of her as right before they paraded her away. Then her shoes were knocked off. Her coat was lost. And then they beat the hell out of her and dragged her through the U.S. Capitol. She didn't get out of jail till later that night. You know, she's not the criminal here. This cop is a criminal. How dare he do that to anyone, let alone a woman? Beat the living hell out of her when she just got pushed in this tunnel. She had no idea what was going on. It's really a horrible story. And there's several stories like that. I bet we see more of that as this footage is released.
TheGatewayPundit.com, Tucker Carlson, Alex Jones, James O'Keefe. You can really count on one hand who the real fighters are, and it's you, the viewers and listeners, that make it all possible. We've got some really bad news. We knew it was coming. It was a lie that James O'Keefe resigned. It was put out yesterday by the board, it looks like. James O'Keefe has been removed. He's been fired from the organization he founded and led for eating someone's sandwich. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, eating someone's sandwich, and he yelled at someone once. So there you go. And they're threatening to criminally indict people. The last straw was that coup when he exposed Pfizer, head of mRNA.
Good morning, Alex. Great to be with you in the InfoWars crowd. I think this news about James O'Keefe is tragic. I don't know how Project Veritas is going to have the same feel, is going to be able to put out the same products, the excellence in reporting that they've had without James O'Keefe. I think they might be fooling themselves. I'm really looking forward to what you just teased, and that is James may have an announcement on his future. I don't think James O'Keefe is going away. And what he has done to help expose so much in this country, the guy deserves a medal. Instead, we have Joe Biden giving medals to people like Ruby and Shea from Georgia, election workers there, and different people. And yet James O'Keefe is the one who really is saving this country. So, you know, I totally support James. I've known him for, you know, a dozen years like you. I think he's phenomenal. And I look forward to more work by James O'Keefe. And as far as Project Veritas, I don't know how they fill that huge hole that James will leave behind.
Well, the evidence is overwhelming. The FBI was putting pressure on the board, threats of indictments, and now they've choked. I know O'Keefe, again, deserves a medal not to be indicted. They've already tried to arrest him and indict him one other time, supposedly for wiretapping, which wasn't true. Now, getting into January 6th, nobody's been on this like Gateway Pundit other than Tucker Carlson. We've obviously been very close to it. They've been trying to put me in jail. They're trying to put 2 of my crew members in jail for just being outside the Capitol as well. I know you've got some of the same sources, but, man, this Proud Boys trial, so much is coming out. You wrote a great report, the 15 points that prove it was an inside false flag operation. Give us a little prelude on what you're working on and what you make of this development that Tucker Carlson has been given access to the 42,000 hours of footage.
Well, I'm glad that it's coming out. Over the weekend, we saw a couple of reports that Kevin McCarthy was going to renege on what he had promised, and I'm glad that that isn't the case. And I'm very excited to hear and to see some of this footage. I suspect that McCarthy will release it publicly. I believe that he has the duty to do that, and I know that Gateway Pundit, we will be looking forward to finding and scouring through all of that footage. I think, Alex, and I know that you'll agree with this, and that is that the more that we look at January 6th, and by the way, I was sitting within arm's reach from you on January 6th at the Ellipse before people marched over to the U.S. Capitol, and I'd never seen a larger crowd in my life. There was a million people there, at least I was, you know, would estimate. It went as far as I could see. Everyone was peaceful, like every Trump rally. Everyone was peaceful. We were very hopeful that day. Unfortunately, it did not turn out the way that we had planned, not turn out the way that Mike Pence had promised us just within 48 hours beforehand. And so we saw what happened later on. But, you know, Alex, the more we look into this, the more people we talk to, it appears that this was a planned, organized, coordinated event to attack the American people. And the violence was started by the police, who started firing rubber bullets and then firing off these gas canisters into the crowd. We now have footage that we're going to be putting up of one of these canisters. You know, people are getting a little more bold now, and they're sending us some stuff, a canister exploding right on somebody's, you know, right next to them. So
that's right. A lot of the victims of January 6th have been afraid to speak out because of the persecution. And look at how the January 6th Commission came out and tried to seal it for 20 plus years. They've got to be really concerned right now, because just the footage you and others dug up shows Ray Epps not just calling for an attack, but helping ram signs over the police and into the structure. So they have got to be really concerned right now.
I think you're absolutely right, Alex. They should be scared. And Liz Cheney is probably the one who's most upset, because the truth is going to come out. And again, like I was saying, this was all premeditated. This was a coordinated attack on the American people. We have the evidence now. We're going to see more evidence coming forward. You know, we posted something last week on that Proud Boy trial that's going on, and how Tario, the leader of the Proud Boys, was approached by this woman who says that she says now that this FBI-trained, FBI-CIA-trained agent had told her to send this footage to Tario and make sure that he got it. Well, she sent it to him, and now we know that this guy was working, I believe, as a Fed, certainly was trained as a Fed, that he admits to. But and so this is, again, another setup before that day. It's really horrible, Alex, to see that this is what our government has been doing. I know you've been shouting this from the rooftops for years, but now we're really seeing this government was attacking its own people. And the disgrace is that these gentlemen and women who go to trial in D.C., who were there that day, they're getting the book thrown at them for things like walking inside the Capitol. And I know you and the fact that you were outside that day. You didn't even go in. You were telling people to be calm, and yet here they come and harass you and your staff. It's really horrible what we witnessed. And
Ray Epps has never
– we could turn it around.
That's right. Ray Epps testified to the committee that he, quote, orchestrated it. But he's not been arrested like Owen Schroyer and Sam Montoya. Let's come back to more about this with the one and only Jim Hoff, GatewayPundit.com.
Latest inside information is that Trump will be arrested for this payoff of Stormy Daniels on Tuesday of next week. There was an interview that Fox had with Greg Jarrett, and he lays out in this interview exactly what's going on this case. He doesn't think that there are legal charges there against Trump. But nevertheless, they've trumped him up, and they're going after Trump in a real big way, and they've gotten real serious. So we just have to wait and see. But listen to what Greg Jarrett says about the legalities of these charges. Very important.
Okay, so now back to that Fox News alert. Former President Trump saying this morning that he will be arrested on Tuesday. Trump said that on Truth Social. He said, in fact,
quote, the far and away leading Republican candidate and former president of the United States of America will be arrested next week. Protests take our nation back. Fox News legal analyst Greg Jarrett is here to react. Greg, break this down for us.
Well, you know, I wrote a column about this because you could see this coming a mile away. It's purely politically driven by Alvin Bragg. And I describe this as the most cockamamie legal theory I think I've ever heard of. Forget about the fact that this is a 7-year-old case and the statute of limitations appears to have elapsed 2 years ago. But the legal theory is something that is not just novel. It seems abusive of the legal system. Here it is in a nutshell. Take a business records misdemeanor and try to transform it, to supercharge it into a felony by attaching to it a second crime. Now, what is the second crime? That's the question we don't know. It can only be one of two things, a campaign violation under state law or federal law. Here's the problem. It can't be a campaign violation under state law because it was a federal election. And it can't really be a campaign violation under U.S. statutory campaign laws because Bragg is a Manhattan DA. Local and state prosecutors can't bring charges on federal crimes, only state crimes. In addition to all of that, there are other problems. Bragg would have to prove that Trump was personally involved in falsifying business records. Second of all, he'd have to prove that Trump understood the incredibly complex and convoluted campaign laws that nobody understands, and that, having known them, he intended to violate them. And then finally, they'd have to get around what's known as the dual purpose doctrine. That is to say, if Trump had a personal reason or even a commercial reason for paying the money to Stormy Daniels, then it is not under the law a campaign contribution, and he didn't violate anything. You know, the Department of Justice spent years looking at it. The Federal Elections Commission looked at it, and they both said the law isn't there and the facts don't support it. You know, in addition, Bragg's predecessor spent years trying to find something related to the Stormy Daniels payment, and in the end walked away saying there is nothing. So, you know, I think it's a shame that the justice system is being used for politically driven prosecutions. I think Bragg sees himself as, oh, we've got to stop Trump. I'm going to be the savior of the republic. Frankly, given the rampant crime in Manhattan, New Yorkers need saving from Alvin Bragg.
Hey, Greg, let me ask you what Tuesday may look like. Alvin Bragg has driven bail reform in New York City. New York City is a no-cash bail justice system, so I presume that means President Trump, if arrested according to his own Truth Social post, how would his Tuesday unfold?
Well, he'll get bail. You know, he still has Secret Service protection. As I understand it, Bragg's office notified federal officials, the Secret Service, and they, you know, the Secret Service is not going to let go of the president they're protecting, even though he's a former president. And so this will be arranged. He'll probably be fingerprinted, and then he would be released on bail. You know, Alvin Bragg has downgraded serious felonies to misdemeanors in Manhattan. That's mm-hmm. his M.O. The day he took office, he signed his manifesto. You know, armed robbery? Nah, it's just a petty misdemeanor.
If what you're saying is true and there isn't a legal basis for this after the arrest, what happens immediately after that? He makes bail. Then what happens as far as Trump proving his innocence or what's the next step after that?
Well, there would have to be an arraignment in which there's a presentment of the charges against him. He has an opportunity to enter a plea, and then the case begins in earnest. He'll plead not guilty, of course. And I think the first thing his lawyers will do is to challenge the merits, the veracity of the charge against him and the law, just as I've described, that you cannot take a state crime and supercharge it into a felony a misdemeanor into a felony based on a federal law, if that's how this thing goes down. Now, you know, maybe Bragg is somehow going to, you know, say, oh, it was a violation of state campaign laws, in which case there will still be a motion to dismiss by Trump and his legal team to toss this case out based on the frailty of that argument. So, you know, there'll be a bunch of legal challenges before it ever, you know, gets to trial, if it ever gets to trial. And there will be appeals as well. Now, I was talking to Alan Dershowitz about this, and he said, look, Trump's problem, and Dersh is right, Trump's problem is you've got, you know, a biased New York prosecutor, you probably got a biased jury, and just as you can convince a grand jury to indict a ham sandwich, as Dershowitz said, you could probably convince a New York jury to convict a ham sandwich. And so, you know, Dershowitz said Trump's best course of action will eventually be on appeal.
Can I ask you just the politics behind this? So, you know, as you said, maybe with this jury, they're going to, you know, he'll come out convicted or whatever. What does that do for his ability to run? Will he look like a victim in this situation come Tuesday? Will that work out for him in some way as it did in Mar-a-Lago? His ratings shot up after that.
Well, there's a legal and a political aspect to it, obviously. I mean, I think, you know, when people begin to digest what Alvin Bragg, the district attorney, has really done here, and they begin to appreciate this for what it is, a, you know, political vendetta, an effort to stop Trump from continuing further with his presidential campaign, I think Americans will probably say this is fundamentally unfair. And there'll be a backlash, and that may result in even more support for Donald Trump. However, you know, a conviction would be troublesome if, you know, he ends up being convicted. You know, as I understand the law, he can't hold public office, including the presidency. I haven't studied that, so I can't say that for sure. I mean, a misdemeanor, you probably can. A felony? Probably not.
All right. Well, Greg Jarrett, thanks for joining us on such short notice with that breaking news. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Greg.
All right.
Sure. My pleasure.
I'm Steve Ducey.
I'm Brian Kilmeade.
And I'm Ainsley Earhart. And click here to subscribe to the Fox News YouTube page to catch our hottest interviews and most compelling analysis.
There's been some breaking news this week. One of these committees has uncovered some additional bank records that show China paid to the Biden family additional monies. He's claiming it went to family members, nothing went to him. So here's this interview concerning those particular payments, and you'll have to dig down in the internet and find out more details on who those went to, but it was family members is what being claimed. But here we go with this interview.
Now, according to an oversight investigation on March 1st, 2017, less than 2 months after then Vice President Biden left office, well, not one, not two, not three, but four different members of the Biden family, they started receiving payments from an entity named Robinson Walker LLC. Now, Joe Biden's brother, James, received a whopping $360,000 in incremental payments. Zero experience Hunter, you know, the author and artist that he is, Portraits of a Crack Addict, he got $500,000. Bo Biden's widow, Haley, who was also Hunter's lover at the time, no judgments, whatever. This is a messed up family. Anyway, she got $35,000. And an unknown Biden received 70 grand. Now, we don't know what these various members of the Biden family did to actually earn the money. But what we do know is where it came from. It came from the People's Republic of China. Now, we're going to know a lot more when we get the suspicious activity reports. They've been very slow to hand them over to the committee. This is the House Government Reform Oversight Committee. But according to the ongoing investigation, prior to making the bulk of these payments, Robinson Walker LLC, which is operated by a Biden business associate, they received a $3 million wire transfer from a major Chinese energy company. But that's not all. In 2015, when Joe Biden was still vice president, Robinson Walker LLC, they received a wire totaling nearly $180,000 from an unknown company with a foreign bank account. Now, that was money that was divided between Walker and members of the Biden family. So, again, we ask, what did the Bidens do for all of this money? What did Joe do for any of this money? What favors might be owed to the likes of China and Russia and Ukraine and all these foreign countries that they apparently made a lot of money with? Now, if you think that Joe wouldn't sell out the country to benefit his low-class, money-hungry family, let's follow the money, because that's where the answer will eventually be found. Because it happened over and over again. Look at the case of Ukraine. Zero experience Hunter goes on GMA. Do you have any experience in Ukraine? No. Oil? No. Energy? No. Gas? No. Coal? No. Why are you being paid millions? Hunter Biden literally said, I don't know. And to ABC's credit, they said, maybe because your father's the vice president in charge of Ukraine? Probably. Yeah, so it makes sense. How do you get all that money without any experience? Anyway, in a statement, Hunter Biden's spokesperson, they finally got back to us. We're glad to see that. They say they did not deny the payments. They called the investigation a wild and baseless right-wing conspiracy. Where have we heard that before? Hunter Biden, a private citizen with every right to pursue his own business endeavors, joined several business partners in seeking a joint venture with a privately owned legitimate energy company in China. It was all above board, according to Hunter.
It keeps building up, but the Department of Justice doesn't seem to be moving on this. What's coming up next is James O'Keefe was removed as CEO of the organization that he founded, Veritas, Project Veritas. But he started a brand new one now, O'Keefe Media Group. And I would encourage everyone to go in there and start supporting him 100%. He's a fine person. He needs the support. Go in and put up money, and they'll get cameras to parties that can start on projects that they have underway. So this is the interview that Alex had with James O'Keefe. Really insightful, and we need to support James O'Keefe.
I mean, I think the world's on fire. I think that the pendulum is swinging back. I think things are going to get better before they get worse. Some people say that they're a realist. I would say that I'm a realist and an optimist. I actually do believe that the pendulum is swinging back because people are waking up. I believe that I've been doing this for 14 years in a serious way. And I started in my dad's garage. I built out I believe one of the most effective nonprofit newsrooms this country's ever seen, and one that achieved credibility because I don't lie to my audience. I always tell the truth to my audience. I've always done investigative reporting. And what I've seen, Alex, in the last, I would say, 6 weeks after what I've been through, which was ousted from the company I founded days after breaking the biggest story I ever broke on Pfizer Pharmaceutical, was thousands and thousands of people saying, okay, I'm ready to go now. They're just so activated and they're so willing to do. They're like, how can I help? What can I do?
Exactly. What were they thinking? We only got him for one segment because Paul Watson's coming up. James O'Keefe, rising like the Phoenix, the creator of Project Veritas, kicked out, obviously, for exposing Pfizer and more. James O'Keefe, we've only got 8 minutes with you, so I want to give you the floor. You're launching a whole new initiative, and we congratulate you, O'KeefeMediaGroup.com. James O'Keefe.
Alex Jones, it's great to be on your show. I am announcing that I'm going to put the little tiny cameras into the hands of thousands of people, that they've awakened a sleeping giant. I have been arrested, put in handcuffs twice by the FBI in the last decade, placed on effective house arrest, sued dozens of times, smeared, defamed. I know you know something about those things because I've been on your show in the past. And then a month ago, after the biggest story I ever broke on Pfizer Pharmaceutical, with a man at Pfizer talking about mutating the virus. I was effectively ousted from the company that I founded. So I'm starting anew. They've awakened a sleeping giant. Over the next few weeks and few months, and you know that I'm a man of my word and I always do what I say I'm going to do. I know your audience knows that. I'm going to take these little cameras and I'm going to get them in the hands of everyone. So because the people in power are the only way we're going to change things in this country and in our society is to create an army of exposers with cameras. And that is what I'm going to do. The name of this initiative is called O'Keefe Media Group, OMG. OMG. O'KeefeMediaGroup.com. You can go on this website. You can subscribe, which will sponsor a camera. I've got some ride or die people working with me, some great elite journalist team that are still with me, Alex. And that is what we're going to do. We're going to, it's like Uber for journalism. We're going to make this thing expand all across the country. I wasn't ready for that a year ago. Now I'm ready for it. I wanted to tell your audience my plans.
I know you don't want to look back, but people want to know. Obviously, whatever they did is going to kill Project Veritas, that you are Project Veritas, and you're beyond bouncing back. You never got taken down, but just the craziness of what's happened and the backlash over there, people are interested to get a few minutes on that, and obviously a lot of the best folks from there have come over with you. Can you give people an update on what really happened?
Well, I never really focused on board composition. I've learned a lot from this whole thing that's happened. I don't know if you saw, I gave a 45-minute speech to my staff when I left. That was about 3 weeks ago.
Yes, we aired it.
I never really focused on the composition of my board. It wasn't really something that I was thinking about. I mean, as a nonprofit, Project Veritas 501c3 is actually not owned by any one man. It's a board of directors is in control. And there are only three people on the board. For many years, I never really focused on that. I was the CEO. I was responsible for running a budget, managing the people, leading the organization. But I never really focused on board composition or board governance. That was probably a mistake I made. I probably should have focused more on who was on my board. But that's, Alex, one of the things about running a media organization, and I respect your autonomy, your independence. You have to look at who runs the media, who owns the media, who's in control of the media. And I've always been a guy who tried to operate without fear or favor. So you can't be afraid to look into anything, and you can't be partial. You have to be factual and truthful. And the problem in media these days is the advertising influence is so pernicious. It dominates like CNN, like brought to you by Pfizer, brought to you by Pfizer. You can't turn on the damn TV without hearing these advertisements. I never took advertising money. I never took advertising. No one ever told me what to do. And unfortunately now, well, it's not unfortunate. It's actually a blessing in disguise. Now I'm going to totally own this venture. We've already gotten a few thousand subscribers. I already have tens of thousands of people emailing me wanting to wear the cameras. So I think it's so important to be truly operating without fear or favor. And I've learned a lot of things from what I went through. And one of the things I learned is, well, let's just say there won't be a board of directors this time around, Alex.
Well, that's right. And when the deep state strikes, you didn't just fall over and cower. You came back even stronger. So I can't wait to see what you're going to do. I can't wait to see the big stories breaking at O'KeefeMediaGroup.com. Everybody should get involved. Everybody should support it. Everybody should get behind it right now. Can you give us a little sneak peek on what some of the big stories are? Are you right now just scaling up and standing up an army of citizen journalists?
I'll do both. I mean, I'm scaling and standing up an army, and that's the critical thing. I think we need to empower and decentralize journalism. And we have to decentralize it. We have to equip people and train them. What are the qualities it takes to be in the army? Number one, you have to be absolutely fearless. You have to be fearless. That's few and far between. Number two, you have to have integrity. You have to have journalism ethics. You know, it's funny. I mentioned CNN. Oliver Darcy texted me. I know you know who he is, Alex. Oliver Darcy at CNN. He goes, "Hey, James, pretty interesting venture. You're starting this website. Tell me more about it." I say, "Well, Oliver, we'll be offering classes on our website, like master classes on journalism ethics. And while I charge $20 for those, Oliver Darcy at CNN, I'll give those to you for free." So I'm going back and forth with him on that. As far as the subject matter, I mean, I'm really interested in investigating the three-letter agencies. I've been raided by the FBI. That happened a year and a half ago. And I'm also interested in staying on the Pfizer pharmaceutical beat. That was the biggest story, Alex, that we ever did about a month ago.
When I saw it air that day, I said, they're coming after him now. And they snuck up behind you through the board.
I mean, this is one week after the story is when I was ousted. And I'm the same guy I've been for 13 years. I'm probably a better leader.
Well, I love the dirt. I love the dirt. You paid for a $12,000 Christmas party. I mean, you are like Lex Luthor here, buddy. This is evil.
There was black cars. They say I took black cars to meetings. They say I took ate sandwiches from pregnant ladies, gave me their sandwiches. So in the announcement video, I don't know if you caught my announcement video, I get out of a black car and I steal a sandwich. So there's a sort of an allegory there. And then also I do off Broadway in my spare time. I do musical theater. So anyway, that's who I am, Alex. I can't change who I am. I've always been the same guy for 15 years. The difference is obviously I knew they would try to ruin the reputations of those who exposed them. But in response, we're going to build an army, not just 12 people or 20 people. No. It's going to be hundreds of people.
James, this is so exciting. We only have a 2-minute break, and then Paul Watson takes over in 7 minutes. But do five more minutes with us, because I want to ask you about the linchpin or the Achilles heel of the corrupt system being whistleblowers, and what you make of Redfield coming out last week exposing Fauci. You know, that's a whistleblower doing it publicly, not, you know, hidden video or secret video. But everybody needs to go to O'KeefeMediaGroup.com right now. 20 seconds to break. What do they do when they get to O'KeefeMediaGroup.com?
Subscribe. Sponsor a camera. It's $20. Or you got some coin, it's $1,000 to get one of these really special cameras that we're white labeling and shipping to hundreds of people in the coming couple weeks.
All right, we are back in 120 seconds to talk about the age of the whistleblower and where James O'Keefe sees the world, and then hopefully he'll join us again soon, because I thought he'd be gone a few months. He never even went away for a second. We'll be right back. Well, James O'Keefe doesn't seem beaten down by this unprecedented attack. Founder and head of Project Veritas, now the head of the O'Keefe Media Group. He seems emboldened and energized and exciting. During the breaks, I've never seen him this animated. James, we've got 5 minutes left. Paul Watson's taking over here. I was talking about whistleblowers, the power of whistleblowers, behind the scenes and publicly scaring the system. How would you describe the moment in time we're in historically right now?
I mean, I think the world's on fire. I think that the pendulum is swinging back. I think things are going to get better before they get worst. Some people say that they're a realist. I would say that I'm a realist and an optimist. I actually do believe that the pendulum is swinging back because people are waking up. I believe that I've been doing this for 14 years in a serious way. And I started in my dad's garage. I built out I believe one of the most effective nonprofit newsrooms this country's ever seen. And one that achieved credibility. Because I don't lie to my audience. I always tell the truth to my audience. I've always done investigative reporting. And what I've seen, Alex, in the last, I would say, 6 weeks after what I've been through, which was ousted from the company I founded days after breaking the biggest story I ever broke on Pfizer Pharmaceutical, was thousands and thousands of people saying, okay, I'm ready to go now. They're just so activated and they're so willing to do. They're like, how can I help? What can I do?
Exactly. What were they thinking?
I mean, I don't know if they were thinking, but like I say, it was either a really stupid timing, or they were compromised. It has to be one or the other. Right? It's just a bizarre confluence of events. But I, as I said to you before the break, I learned a lot from this. And what I have learned is that there's a lot of evil in the world. Probably the evil has gotten more evil, but the good has gotten more good, because you need good people who are willing to do what is required, to go out and expose what's going on. And as I said before the break, you got to have fearlessness and integrity. Those are the two prerequisites. If your audience is listening to this and you are an unafraid person, but you also have a lot of ethics and integrity, that's the person I want in my army of videographers. You can go to my website, O'KeefeMediaGroup.com, and reach out to us, and we'll get you a camera.
All right. We got 2 minutes left in closing. You've got a lot on your mind, but you also got to go. What else do you want to impart to the audience?
I think that there's never been an opportunity like this to be a part of something, to be a part of a movement. And I spent my entire last couple of days responding to thousands of messages. I have a whole team. We're sitting on the floor here. We're in a makeshift war room building anew. It's a, you know, I went through a lot of hell. I went through a lot of pain in not just the what I went through with Pfizer and ousting me at the company I founded, but the FBI raids and the two federal jury trials. I promise your audience, Alex, that this will never happen again. I own this company now. And I promise you that I will never bow down to pressure. I will never not tell the truth because someone is putting pressure on me. I stood to my guns. And I think it was the right thing to do because the good people are now at my side. And there's so many other good people like Debbie, the Pfizer whistleblower, one of the two Pfizer insiders. They brought us that story. She went on stage with me 10 days ago, and it was really inspirational. And she said, I'm willing now. I'm ready now.
She said, I was fearing for my life, but now I don't care.
Yeah, I don't know if she said I don't care, but she said they had a van outside her. Pfizer put a van outside her home surveilling her. They brought her in a room, interrogated her, and she said, after what happened to you, James, I am now willing to go public. I want those people to contact me, and they are contacting me.
That's what scares the globalists, and that's the future for our children and society. O'KeefeMediaGroup.com. James, thanks for joining us. God bless you, and really love what you're doing. You're an inspiration.
Thanks, Alex.
Amazing.
This last clip we're going to play before we're going to end with Jay Dyer, and he's going to talk about some of the in-depth research that he's done. And we need to really support him. But first, there's this. There was a reporter that Light put up in Chicago, had his credentials removed or taken away, and he gets a citizen's, communications 3 minutes. And here's what he had to say to her directly when she was presiding over one of their meetings up there.
As a reminder, please remember that all speakers must sign up to speak. And speakers cannot yield or transfer their time to another speaker. Thank you. Our next speaker is William Kelly. Mayor Lightfoot, you and I may have gotten off on the wrong foot. Reporter WilliamJKelly.com. I'm a veteran reporter in the city of Chicago, Emmy Award-winning TV host, radio, print journalism. I should be sitting over there with my colleagues, but I'm standing over here because on a weekly basis I was going viral asking you obvious questions. And instead of answering them, you told me that crime was down, my videos went viral, millions of views, comments, likes, and shares, and it was hurting your re-election campaign. So you revoked my media credential. That should never happen in a free country. And I'm asking the city council to take the media credential process away from the next mayor of Chicago and the next superintendent of police. And put it in the hands of the Constitution. What you've done to the city of Chicago, I feel like this is more of a victim impact statement than an actual public comment. What you've done to me is nothing compared to what you've done to my city, the city of Chicago, the city that I was born and raised in, the city that I love with all my heart. You became mayor. The people of Chicago elected you. You shut down our schools, you shut down the churches, you shut down the businesses. You did the one thing that I thought could never happen. As somebody who was born and raised on the south side of Chicago, I never thought in my life that I would ever see the city of Chicago brought down so low as you have managed to bring it down. Shame on you. That is a legacy that you are going to have to carry. Future historians are going to have a hard time understanding how how you ever even became mayor of the city of Chicago. I intend to write that book. I intend to make sure that at least there is some possible way for the city of Chicago to move forward. I hope that you realize what damage you have done to the city. I hope that after today's city council meeting, you will pack your suitcase and get the hell out of my city.
Mr. Kelly,
you are a pandemic. You are a pandemic. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Well, he was mad and angry at her, and rightfully so. Here we're going to end with Jay Dyer, and he's going to talk to us about the organization that is at the really top level, and it's all Hollywood and everything else, too. But here we go with Jay Dyer. We're going to end it, and then we're going to give you some click-offs so you can go in and listen to his whole program. But here we go, ending with Jay Dyer.
Welcome back to the Ocean. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. And as you can see, now that I have these boomer reading glasses on, I'm actually a lot more authoritative and a lot more scholarly. So I'm even more reputable now that I have these glasses on. You have to listen to me even with all due reverence and submission, because I can scowl at you over these like this. You see, doesn't this make me look academic and authoritative? Now, we were talking about James Billington, Fire in the Minds of Men, the History of the Revolutionary Faith. I was talking about how we were getting up to Weishaupt and the Illuminists. And a little bit before Weishaupt and those guys in England, we had the outbreak of a lot of secret societies and the spread of Masonic lodges throughout Europe. Probably the world's most famous secret society is Freemasonry. And what we're doing today is really kind of a demystifying operation, because people sort of get bamboozled by a lot of the symbols of, ooh, ah, the mysteries and all this kind of stuff. And I'm going to do a little bit of a demystifying today, a little bit of a debunking. What are we debunking? That these secret societies are all powerful, that they are anything other than collections of human beings with common cause, purpose, who engage oftentimes in espionage. And this is the key connection here, that secret societies are quite often state actors, or co-opted by state actors, or co-opted by foreign actors, to engage in espionage and reconnaissance and subversion. Not always. There may be some weirdos that create their own little sect or cult or group. So not every cult or every sect is necessarily the creation of some state or part of some vast conspiracy. But many of the more famous secret societies in history have been, in fact, the tools of various powers, and maybe not even state powers, maybe even very powerful financial powers, very, very powerful private financial powers have perhaps created secret societies. In fact, we'll see that when we talk about Cecil Rhodes and the Milner Roundtable groups in a moment that Dr. Carol Quigley covers, because he explains the secret society behind that whole British Empire operation. Now, in terms of Masonry, for example, if you go back to the 1600s, as Masonry was beginning to get really popular throughout Europe, in what they call the speculative lodges. And this is more of a mystical and kind of esoteric approach to the Masons Guild of the Middle Ages, which were a Catholic institution that eventually got used for geopolitical and subversive purposes. So it eventually got retooled and repurposed in what were called speculative Masonic lodges. And then eventually we have the birth of the Grand Lodge of England. And around this time of the Henry VIII and the split between the Anglican Church and the Roman Catholic Church, there was this explosion of lodges and hermeticism. And this is roughly around the time of the Elizabethan Renaissance. And a lot of these characters who wrote famous plays and wrote famous poems, you know, Ben Jonson and William Shakespeare, Edmund Spenser, they would actually encode a lot of hermetic alchemical messages in their writings. Studied a bunch of this in grad school. And that's because it was all the rage at this time to be interested in the hermetic arts, the secret arts, alchemy, and this kind of stuff. And one of those figures, one of the most famous figures in the history of British intelligence, was a famous occultist secret society member. You may have heard of him. His name is Dr. John Dee. Dr. John Dee is famous because he's the first 007. He would sign his letters with a cane and two balls. That's a two-ball cane, literally, to the queen so that she would know when she saw that little symbol, okay, this is from our boy Dr. John Dee. Dr. John Dee was a famous occultist, and he believed that his Neoplatonic mysteries and magic would eventually achieve deification or apotheosis, that man could become God through this process in the Dr. John Dee system. And he's also the creator of what's called Enochian magic, this elaborate system of language and symbols that supposedly is to contact angels. But in my estimation, what this is about is spycraft. What better way to send messages back to the queen? There's John Dee with the queen there, doing his magic spells and whatnot, then using this arcane, absurd, invented Enochian magic. In other words, it's a tool, it's a cryptographic technique for encoding messages for the queen. So I'm sorry to demystify a lot of this stuff. Now, that's not to say that there are no subversive occultists or that there aren't people that take it seriously. There are. But what we're talking about today is this element that's often overlooked, which is that a lot of secret society networking and all this kind of stuff is merely intelligence apparatuses of the state or some powerful interest. For example, there's a famous historian's text, Builders of Empire, Jessica Harlan Jacobs. And she is a mainline historian from the University of North Carolina Press. She teaches at the University of Florida. Nothing to do with conspiracy texts, purely academic text. And her book, Builders of Empire, is just about how the Masonic lodges, by the time of the founding of the Grand Lodge of England, became the intelligence network of the British Empire. And if you watch movies, for example, like The Man Who Would Be King with Michael Caine and Sean Connery, you'll notice that they are essentially spies. They're reconnaissance operatives for the British Army. And their job is to go around to various Masonic lodges and gain intelligence. And they end up being these scallywag con men. And that's a famous novel, I think, by Kipling, right? So the real history, the real machinations behind that gets back to things like the Royal Society. And this is a book that is written by a Mason. Robert Lomas wrote a book called Freemasonry and the Birth of Modern Science. And it's his account of the history of the Royal Society. And in that book, he basically says that modern scientism is really the product, the invention of, the promotion of the Royal Society. And that's really the ideological underpinnings of the British Empire. So British intelligence, a la the structures like Oxford, Cambridge, and so forth, they're really eaten. These things are the brains, you could say, of the British Empire and the British intelligence apparatus, going back, as I said, even to the war, even before the establishment of MI6. And so secret societies, as you can see, they form this very important network for the state or for, again, other interests beyond the state. And that's what we're going to look at next. What about non-state actors? Is there such a thing as secret societies that might serve private interests, private corporations, corporate interests, a corporate secret society? Could that exist? Is there such a thing? Yes, absolutely. In fact, there's many of these. Now, there's a movie that's no good. I think it has Julia Roberts in it and maybe Clive Owen or somebody or Pierce Brosnan. I don't remember who's in it, but there's a movie about corporate espionage with